Hey guys, John Richards, Cut Above Horror Review, episode number 8. Yeah, we're going highbrow this week. My goodness, from 1990. Just can't believe we're finally doing this movie. It's a Heidelberg pick, Frankenhooker from 1990. That's all you need to know. So enjoy episode 8, a Cut Above Horror Review. Don't forget to like us on Facebook. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Instagram. And it's time to get highbrow. A Cut Above Horror Review starts right about now. Hookers.
Cut my life into pieces.
Good evening, and welcome to A Cut Above Horror Review, a podcast where we review all things horror. I'm your host, Jacqueline, and tonight we will be discussing Frankenhooker from 1990. But first, let's meet everybody else on the show. First of all, what's going down, Heidelberg?
What's going on?
How you doing?
Oh, hail Frankenhooker.
How's your week been?
Pretty good. A hurricane's been like, it didn't touch down here, but there was a lot of rain this weekend, so I've watched a lot of movies all weekend.
It sounds like a great weekend.
Yeah, like I watched.
As long as you were safe and all right, like no damage or dangerous.
It was really overblown, but got some good movie time and caught up on.
Cool. What'd you watch? What'd you watch?
Real quick, I watched The Green Knight and Pig. They're both rentals on Amazon. Both pretty good. I watched A Classic Horror Story on Netflix. I heard some rumblings about that one. I watched Reminiscence on HBO. It's the Hugh Jackman flick. And I did a Lance Hendrickson double feature, Pumpkinhead and Near Dark. Shout out to Jose and Shaggy at the Cinema Villains podcast. They covered Near Dark like a month ago. So it was on my mind.
Well, that sounds like a good roster of movies that you got caught up on this weekend. It's pretty rad. Next up, let's meet John. How's it going, John?
Hello, guys. By the way, the weather out here is perfect. I'm not dealing with what you're dealing with, Heidelberg, but it did sprinkle out here today. So it was...
pissing in the wind doesn't mean it's sprinkling, right?
Well, I didn't do that. I did that the other day. But, yeah, the sprinkle was rough. We got through it. It ended up being like 79 today. So, and I didn't watch
That's
a bunch
San
of
Diego.
Movies. Exactly. I didn't watch a bunch of movies except this one. And I'm not giving Heidelberg the finger for doing making us watch Frankenhooker.
Are you calling your score out already? Is that a solid one?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. Perhaps.
A likely story.
Exactly. Well, Jacqueline, how are you? And what have you been doing this week?
I am doing well. Thank you. Good. And it's been a pretty good week. My husband's best friend was visiting and she was staying with us for the week, and she is a really cool gal. Nice. So that was just it was, you know, we haven't had a lot of company for the past year and a half with the pandemic. And so it was nice to actually have a little bit of social time. I feel like it's been such a weird year and a half that we kind of have forgotten how to socialize correctly, and we have to like overcome some awkwardness to like get back in the flow. Yeah, good visit, some good company, good meals, etc. Pretty low-key, didn't really have much time to watch any movies except for one, The Beach with Leonardo DiCaprio. Have you guys seen that one?
Yeah, it's a good flick.
Long time ago.
Yeah. It was good. It was just totally unexpected. I had no idea what to expect going into that movie. And I was like, oh, this is what this movie is about. Oh, there's a hard left.
Yeah, there's an intensity to that film, too.
It certainly is. It's one of those movies. I don't know if this was just a thing in the late 90s and early 2000s, but the box art at the video store for that just doesn't really show you what kind of movie it is. It doesn't really give you any clues. So I thought it was a romance. And my husband and his friend wanted to throw it on. So I was like, all right, whatever. And I was expecting a romance. And that is not what I got. So,
yeah, I agree with you. I think that box actually represents more of a rom-com than anything else. Because isn't it DiCaprio looking up at the sky or something like that?
Yes.
With a faded woman in the background or something like that?
Exactly.
I think he was coming off of Romeo and Juliet at the time.
Yes.
This was like pre-Titanic, I think, the beach, right? Or right around the same time?
No, it was just after Titanic, because Titanic was...
So they were going for that demographic. Yeah.
Exactly. And so, but still, that's a weird... That's like unexpected for his fan base. Fun fact, he turned down American Psycho to do The Beach.
I heard that. I actually heard that.
That was interesting.
I think it all worked out.
Yeah, I think he's fine.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with Christian Bale. Plus, he did The Departed, which is, like, to me, like, one of the, like, new classics, so.
Yeah, for sure. So, anyway, John, do you have any movie news for us today?
A little bit. I mean, not very much this week. There was a sequel that was released, VHS, their fourth one called VHS 94, which is out.
That's out?
It is out. Yeah, I think it's on demand right now. And then saw this really, really dope trailer to a movie called Prisoners of the Ghost Lamp, which stars Jacqueline's best friend, Bill Moseley, and I don't know if you've ever heard of, but Nicolas Cage is in it as well. It's almost like, it seems like a horror version of Running Man or an updated horror
movie. I can get behind that.
You got to see, you got to see this trailer. It's pretty awesome. You know, not giving too much away. Nicolas Cage obviously becomes a prisoner. He gets like a neck, wrist, and I guess leg explosive thing. He's got to go find Bill Moseley's daughter, and this girl's lost. So if he doesn't do it within this certain amount of time, his head's going to explode, his arms are going to explode, his legs are going to explode. And it's it just seems like Nick Cage turned up to Mandy level.
Evan? All right. Do we know who's directing?
I don't, but I did see that the producers did Mandy and Color Out of Space. So it's that production company, but it looks so good. And I texted you guys that I watched Mandy, and I freaking love that movie. So
I feel like that's kind of become an instant classic comfort movie. Like, if you are into that movie, then it's like it holds up to multiple viewings, and you can just throw it on whenever you feel like watching it.
What you said, Jacqueline, is I agree with. The first time I watched it, I was like, what the fuck am I watching? The second time I watched it, I said, I kind of love this movie. The third time I watched it, I said, actually, I really love this movie. The way it was shot and just everything, you know, it just... I didn't get that vibe from this trailer of it, but I got the vibe of just Nicolas, because he was in that Willy's Wonderland or some shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, I did watch that, and he didn't have any lines.
No speaking lines. Yeah. I heard.
Yeah. And it was just, it didn't feel right. Color Out of Space. Oh my God. If you guys have not seen that, watch that.
Yeah. I've seen that one.
Man,
I have not seen that yet.
Yeah.
You is need that by to. Elijah? Movies,
yeah, I was just going to say what you were just going to say.
Is that by Elijah Wood's production company?
I can't remember. What it's called. I think Color Out of Space and Mandy.
Yeah, Spectravision. I think it's what it's called.
Yes.
Yeah, that's his production company.
Putting out interesting movies.
I mean, both of those movies are fantastic.
And they're taking a risk for sure.
Yeah.
I'm so proud of little Elijah. He's really proven himself.
He did something good with his Lord of the Rings money.
He showed her in Heidelberg. I'm just kidding.
Rude.
Hey, John, I'm giving you the same score as the movie.
Number one,
buddy. Boys.
Two
we're out of fighting ten. Already, guys.
Okay. Sorry. Well, if we're going to fight, let's at least fight about Frankenhooker. So, okay. Heidelberg, why did you choose Frankenhooker?
Yeah, I want to know.
It's been on Shudder for a while. It's Darcy from Joe Bob really loves it. She's always talking about it, and I've never seen it. And I've seen in the last like year or so, I've seen a couple of Henning Lauder's movies.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And they're so ridiculous and schlocky. Like I was just like, I got to see this one.
Yeah,
and I've always seen images of it on like forums and different sites and stuff and memes, but I've never.
It's pretty iconic poster art and box art. That's very memorable. Well, that's a good. Those are good reasons. Do you want to go ahead and give us a little reach around plot synopsis?
All right, I'll give you guys a reach around.
This is one I'm looking forward to, please. Good Lord.
All right. Jeffrey's lost his one true love to a lawnmower bathed in blood. Body parts went missing, yes, so Franklin could complete his test. To resurrect the one he lost, steps were taken at great cost. More parts were needed to complete, so Franklin seeks the ladies of the streets. Deal's gone wrong with a pimp named Zorro, but Supercrack will kill that sorrow. Just be mindful of hot flashes. Crows go off like firecrackers. This love story here will jolt your vaults. A terrifying tale of sluts and bolts.
You did not fail us.
You totally did not on that one. The super crack thing got me like that. That popped me hard. So that was good, man. Well done. Let's hear fried.
How the super crack gets you as soon as you hit it, pops you hard.
It does. It does. It actually literally pops you hard.
That's one of my favorite movies in this. I mean, scenes in this movie.
Oh my God. All right. Here's a spoiler alert. We're talking about Frankenhooker from, I believe it's 1990. May have came out in late 89, but from 1990. We're going to talk about this movie in its entirety. If you've not seen this movie, pause the podcast, go check it out. You can find it on Shudder and then come back to find out what we thought about it. And since Heidelberg picked this bad boy, initial thoughts of Frankenhooker.
My initial thoughts is just, this is a wild movie. It's ridiculous. Just the story in general is pretty crazy, but it's up the alley with the director's other movies. It definitely, it feels like a trifecta, like his trilogy or something, these three movies, but Basket Case and Brain Damage.
Sure.
But I don't want to spoil my review yet, but I like this movie. It's dumb. And I wish I watched it with friends and drinks rather than alone, but I watched it twice already this week. And
oh my God.
Well, I watched it once in the beginning of the week, kind of just as a viewer, because I'd never seen it. And then I watched it with taking notes today. So
Heidelberg is dedicated. He really, commits himself to this podcast and sacrifices. This movie has
something to say. I want to bring it when I review it.
Well, I can't wait to hear you bring it.
Well, Jacqueline, I'm going to pass the torch on to you. What are your initial thoughts of Frankenhooker?
I pretty much agree with everything Heidelberg said. I feel like this movie is kind of like the unholy. It makes it like the unholy trinity. So I was really excited to be able to watch it since I'd never seen it before. I agree. It fits right in with the rest of Hennenlotter's movies. If you've seen any of his other movies, you pretty much know what you're getting with this one. So if that's something that you like, if you like absolutely ludicrous plot and some like schlocky horror comedy with cool effects, then you'd probably like this. What about you, John?
Oh boy. I gotta tell you honestly, is I actually watched this movie when it first came out, maybe in 91. A buddy of mine, Dan, and I, we rented this movie from Blockbuster, and as a 14-year-old young man, really enjoyed it because there was a lot of nudity.
Boobies.
Yeah, true. I'm not a fan of that anymore. Like, to me, you don't just intertwine that anymore. This movie did feel like a lot of Hennenlotter movies. Brain Damage, to me, it was schlocky, and I kind of love the way it was shot. This seemed like a really clean version of his movies, like clean, but just a very well shot movie. And Heidelberg, you and I were talking about it before Jacqueline got on, that it felt like almost a little bit bigger a budget than he's ever had. I love Basket Case. I thought Basket Case was one of the most frightening boxes I've ever seen when I went to Blockbuster. But I still had fun with that movie. Like, to me, this movie all the way till the end. Well, and I apologize, guys. I'm looking at it through 2021 goggles right now. I'm looking at it as a movie that was just very misogynistic. And at some points racist. And it just felt like, really? It was like, even the 90s. Okay. So we were getting out of this schlocky slasher. This is everything that came out that was a horror movie, and we still continued it on a little bit, but we're trying to not take ourselves seriously. Now we have to keep in mind, this is a trauma movie. So Lloyd Kaufman, to me, is a very progressive individual. So the guy kind of understands social commentaries on things. This didn't land for me at all. It did when I was 14. 14-year-old John, this is a 10 out of 10, whatever you're going to rate it there, Hydraberg. I'll give my rating later. It's not there. It's not the 10. So there you go.
Okay. All right. Well, let's just jump into it. You kind of intrigued me with some of the things that you said. Do you want to talk about some of the racism that you saw in the movie?
Are you talking about Zorro?
I think it was just I think the way they portrayed.
I picked up more misogyny than any racism.
Well, and again, like I said, there's a little bit of racism. There's a lot of misogyny in here. I think a lot of 80s slasher movies really had a lot of misogyny in there because you would exploit women like that. But to me, it was just like they had a newscast with an African American woman, and I thought it was so missed. I thought it could have been highlighted better, but it was so grainy because she was on a newscast. That it's just like, hey, I'm just out here to make money. You know, we're not out here to do drugs. And that was such a missed opportunity for me that it was almost a little, it felt a little racist. But the misogyny, obviously, is that, hey, you know, just whip them out. You're good. You're fine. And, enjoy that.
It's a movie about hookers.
I understand. And that's fine. And to me, it's like, it's not so much of a bad thing anymore because you can go to Vegas and you can meet sex workers and that's fine. Yeah. You know, I mean, whatever you need to do to make money, you can do whatever you want to, you know, a porn star or whatever. And that's fine. I have no problems with that. But I mean, just the way it was portrayed on the screen just felt very uncomfortable.
It was a little gratuitous, but it's, you know, that is the time. It was dirty New York, I feel like.
Yeah, that's true.
And I also wondered, like, it was definitely misogynist, but I was wondering, you know, how much of that was to service the plot and how much of it might have been, because with his movies, how much of it might have actually been some social commentary on, like, the state of sex workers at the time. And,
there was,
you know,
I thought there was a lot of men, women. Like I prefaced before, I think Lloyd Kaufman is always aware of social things.
I'm talking about Henenlotter, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and that's true director. Too. Jacqueline, go ahead.
A lot of his movies take place in the inner city, and they seem to have a lot to say. I don't know.
Yeah. Jacqueline, I'd love to hear your thoughts. I mean, seriously, yeah. It's like I'm talking so much. I apologize.
That's okay. No, I asked you. So I think it's a little more complicated than just like straight up misogyny. I think Hydraberg is right. I think there's some social commentary mixed in. So I see this almost as a satire. You could argue that it's like gratuitous and maybe sexist to have like a bunch of naked women, even just being in all these their body parts. But if you break it down a little bit more, so you have this character of Jeffrey who is trying to like basically rebuild his fiance who's been killed. He only has her head. He has to find other body parts. And so he's, you know, basically rounding up these prostitutes to try to find the perfect like replacement body. Yes, you could say that it's gratuitous to have all this nudity and all these close-ups of, you know, sexual body parts and all that. Quite frankly, throughout the movie, I was feeling like, oh boy, this is really misogynistic. I mean, down to the point where you have Jeffrey literally like examining each woman as though it's like a herd of cattle, you know, very objectifying, very much reducing them to like their bodies, right? So I'm like, ooh, this is making me feel a little uncomfortable. This is getting under my skin a little bit. But I started to sense that it was actually a satire because I think we're supposed to see Jeffrey as pretty much a pig. Like we're supposed to see that we're told in the beginning that his, Elizabeth is overweight and she's always dieting and he's trying to find like a better body.
And that was my point, right? From the beginning, like, is it,
oh, okay, I didn't like it, body it,
has, yeah, it could have
tried to pick one out as if I'm shopping on Amazon.
Right.
But then the whole thing kind of backfires on him, right?
And right. Well, you're
jumping all the way to the end.
No, that's true. That's totally true. But to me, if we're going to go back to the beginning, you know, how was Elizabeth dressed? She looked like a cupcake. I mean, she literally looked like a cupcake of everything that she was wearing, you know, and it's mm-hmm. just everything looked so bright and everything. But what was the conversation that she had with her girlfriend is that, you know, he stapled my stomach. Oh, is he a doctor? No, but he just wanted me to lose weight. And it's just like, okay, I get it was a spoof on that, but it just felt very misogynistic because it came back later. And then the very end just kind of like actually made it better because it was just, that's okay. So
he gets his comeuppance in the end.
Exactly. So,
and she says the same spiel to him that he said to her.
Exactly right.
Yeah, exactly. And so but I think that we're supposed to like dislike it. I don't think it's, so there's a difference between a character in a film being misogynistic and the film itself being misogynistic. And so I'm not sure where to draw the line with this. I think it's absolutely obvious that the character himself is misogynistic, but does that reflect the views of the writer and director, or is the film trying to say something else? And so I think it's a little blurry because there's a lot of gratuitous nudity, but then as Heidelberg said, we also have some commentary about the state of social workers, and we see that news program where the woman is saying like, we need this to be legalized to protect women, like to keep them from getting killed. Yeah. And actually Jeffrey chimes in, he's like, she's absolutely right. but then like Heidelberg said, also he gets his comeuppance at the end and he himself is trapped in a woman's body with large breasts and, you know, a shapely figure. And he's going to find out what it's like.
I think it could be played both ways as a commentary, as well as just for laughs, at least at the time, because of the right. boobs mm-hmm. and the cheap gore, you know? But I feel mm-hmm. like with all his movies, there's an underlying message or some type of morality, possibly a tale to be told. They're not just, I think in all his movies, there's like little messages.
Yeah, I
agree.
Did you guys understand what the brain with the eyeball in it was? And we saw it at the beginning.
I was picking up Blood Diner vibes, but.
A little bit.
I think that was just an experiment. Just to show us that he's a funky dude who's into weird things. And nobody seems to blink an eye that he's doing it at the dinner table. Like,
not at all. No, not
social function.
Elizabeth.
And it's like
Elizabeth's mom saying, oh yeah, I need to make my coleslaw.
Yeah.
I know. She's just using the ketchup and there's like a brain with an eyeball in it right there.
It's just like,
yeah, everyone's very nonchalant about it. But yeah, so I thought it was just like a stepping stone experiment. Like he's been working his way up to like a brain that can like react to communication.
And he's getting body parts, I guess, somehow.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah.
Through the electrical company that he works for. He's a
great point.
He's a doctor / scientist, but he works for the electrical company. Can we just talk about like the dialogue and how like stupid it is at times and hilarious?
Yeah. Yeah.
So sure. I have one part I really wanted to touch on.
Okay.
The news reporter in the beginning after the accident, the way she describes the crime scene, I thought was hilarious. She goes, like wood through a mulcher, the girthful fiancé disappeared beneath the blades of the berserk mower that sent her personality raining upon the horrified birthday revelers. In a blaze of blood and bones, blood, bones, and body parts, the vivacious young girl was instantly reduced to a tossed human salad, a salad that police are still trying to gather up, a salad that was once named Elizabeth. I just thought that was so stupid. Like, anybody would put that on the news.
And they overused salad like you wouldn't believe. The salad, yeah. The salad was all over the place. Oh, the dialogue sucked throughout this entire movie too.
Like, so what caught me off guard was like how serious Jeffrey plays it, and I don't know if that was an acting choice, directing, or like it's in contrast to the schlock. He plays everything pretty serious.
He does play pretty straight, for sure.
There are jokes made at his expense or, like, off things he says, but he never says them as if he's trying to get a joke out of you. Like, it's just weird. Like,
I just thought it was weird because, like, he would go out and meet the women, and he was wearing glasses, but he never wore glasses throughout the movie except to, like, he was trying to be Clark Kent or something like that.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe he was trying to disguise himself. I love that part where he goes into New York though to meet the hookers. Yeah. And when he's like inspecting all of them and doing measurements, he's checking the prostitutes, and he's like, there's a scene where he's looking through magnifying glasses, if that's like scientific, at a woman's nipple, and he goes, awesome, utterly awesome. So serious, I just started laughing my ass off. It's so funny and stupid.
So I think it actually adds something to the movie that the actor who plays Jeffrey plays it so straight. Like, yeah, he's not playing it tongue in cheek at all. He's quite earnest.
Yeah.
And I actually thought that was a good choice. It worked for me. It gave like some seriousness and grounding to the movie, which is absolutely ridiculous. But it gives it something to ground itself into. And actually I thought that the actress who played his mother did the same.
Yeah.
Like in the scene where she comes into his bedroom and she's all worried about him because he's grieving. And he's very self-aware of his own mental health, and he quite accurately expresses his feelings of being in a downward spiral. And he's like, I don't know the difference between right and wrong anymore. I feel like I'm losing my grip on reality, and I feel like I'm becoming dangerous.
I felt the exact same way, and then it was just like none of that played out. Except he made Super Crack. So he blew up a guinea pig in the movie because he wanted the guinea pig to try his Super Crack, and the guinea pig exploded in the cage, which I thought was cruel. The guy had like zero. He didn't have. He was more benevolent to me, because he was trying to do something right, even though I love the homages, by the way, you know, Elizabeth Shelley, you know, Mary Shelley doing Frankenstein. I loved, what was his name? Jeffrey Franken.
Franken.
Yeah. So to me, I love those homages. I thought those were great, but look, it just didn't line up for me of, you know, he gave you this info dump of, I don't, you know, I'm grieving. I like that. I thought that was a good character build for him. You know, like you said, Jacqueline, it was, you know, the mother played it really straight. Just like, hey, don't stay up too late. I don't want you to do this. I want you to, you know, go. I met this girl at the grocery store. She wants to talk to you. Yeah. And it's like zero build on that. Zero build on that, because this guy didn't seem evil or wasn't trying to do bad things. In fact, he tried to stop the girls from doing his Super Crack, even though, you know, he made it. Even though he made it.
He changed his mind last minute.
Exactly. Well, right.
I mean, I don't know how redeeming that is.
That
I mean,
scene is so ridiculous.
It's not redeeming. I'm not saying that.
Okay.
I'm not saying it was redeeming at all. I'm just saying he made this, but then it's just like, you know, he made it perfectly clear to you, talking to his mom, I don't know what's good and evil. I don't know what's right and wrong. I'm going to do this. So lean one way or the other. Don't go on both sides of the fence, which was the problem with the character.
It's a good cause to bring Elizabeth back, at least for him. It's a selfish decision, but
certainly.
But
I agree with that.
To him, but he's not worried about the cost of who's, you know, the body parts that he needs. He has no.
Not at the time.
Problems with that. And, you know, prostitutes. Nobody cares about prostitutes, but, right?
Then you go to the other side of it. They all explode, and he just puts them all in duffel bag or in trash bags. And it's like, okay, let's go do this thing. So
that explosive scene is outrageous. They're all paper mache.
Oh my God.
You could tell how cheap the budget was. And there's like firecrackers and sparks going out. It's hilarious.
Okay, so I love the scene where with all the exploding hookers. I mean, I never thought I'd say that sentence, but
it's a pun.
I love that scene. I thought it was just so fucking like balls to the wall, and I mean, so over the top. And like the fact that all the body parts flying around were clearly like these stiff plastic mannequin parts that didn't even look like, you know, fake limbs, like rubbery, or there was like no blood anywhere. It was literally just like plastic body part. I thought that was so hilarious. And kind of like when we talked about Zombievers and somebody was complaining about how the beavers looked too fake and they should have been more realistic.
I mentioned that a little bit.
Yeah, I thought like in that movie, I thought that was like, I would have been mad if it were more realistic. I thought it made it more funny that it was so obviously fake. And that's how I felt here too. I was laughing my ass off.
Zorro busts through the door and his main girl's head comes flying and hits him in the head. We don't even see
him.
Yeah, we don't see anything about him after that.
And it makes this little like pop noise, like boop. I mean, it just cracked me up. I thought it was great. It was epic.
That actor's only been in two movies, this one and Brain Damage.
Oh, really?
Who, Zorro?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, interesting.
Jacked up Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
When you said you thought this movie was racist, I thought you meant him because I was like, are they implying this guy's like Puerto Rican or something? Because he didn't really look it. Like, no, it looked kind of like a whitewashing.
Tan white guy. Yeah, maybe a little bit. Yeah, maybe they were talking about jacked up guys that go to the gym all the time. Maybe that's what they were talking about. No, I'm just kidding.
Was that a humble brag, John Richards? You patting yourself on the back with your like?
No, not at all. Not at all.
All jacked.
There was definitely some critiques on, you know, crack epidemic of the late 80s. That was a thing during this movie.
Yeah, but I did some research and, you know, the crack epidemic didn't happen until like 93, you know, where it became a really big problem. For sure. Yeah, for real. And again, I like
it was on the streets before that.
No, I understand. But yeah. I thought, you know, that's what the producers and the director actually did really well at, you know, predicting that there is this, you know, this beyond this mixed up, whatever it is a cocaine or something like that mixed up with something else that, you know, it became a problem, you know, and I thought it was so brushed over of that woman that was on the TV thing that, you know, we're just out here trying to make money. We're not out here trying to do drugs. We're not trying to be out here to get high. It's, you know, I thought that was actually really important part of the movie.
Was that during that retrospective of like behind the scenes of like street hookers? Like,
yeah, I think so.
Yeah, okay. They show Zorro in a scene where he's like shaking the girl. I want my money, but he's not shaking her at all. Like you could tell the actor's not really shaking the other actor.
He's like pretty much on the side of her.
Just Elizabeth as that hooker when it's not really there.
Jeffrey, help me.
I just thought that scene was funny.
Yeah,
there was a little regarding the whole like crack epidemic. Well, the drug epidemic, you know, that became, I guess crack was later, but still there, you had Nancy Reagan in the 80s saying, just say no. You remember that? And there was a little joke about that in this movie, which I appreciated. It was kind of a little wink to the Nancy Reagans of the world. Just say no.
I did. I don't remember what scene it was, but I remember picking that up.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't remember the scene either, but I know that somebody said he says that. So,
I heard cocaine's a hell of a drug. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, Rick James told me that one time.
Oh my god!
Throwback.
What else? What else do you guys want to talk about?
How ridiculous! Everything else.
I loved how his like makeshift garage lab got like more like bigger and bigger as the movie went along. Like it got cluttered, but at the same time, he had so much more extra shit in there and experiments going on. It's like, really, bro?
I kind of love the way he at first, like this fluid that was in his freezer, but it wasn't fluid, where he had gloves on, but he didn't need gloves later in the movie. And he was able to pull, what's her name? Elizabeth's head out, and it was completely dry. That was fantastic.
Yeah, was that the estrogen based
serum?
Mm-hmm. Serum or whatever.
Yeah. I think certain like details like that, like you just have to throw logic to the wind and just go with it, and you know, accept it as just low budget and humorous.
Like when the hooker fridge, as I deemed it, the hooker fridge tips over. And you get all the like little monstrosities that come walking out, and they fucking grab Zorro up and drag him back in.
That was great. I mean, to me, that was great. That's
a torso with titties and then like the vagina should be. It's so stupid.
That's the body horror element of it, and that's the. And
now, did he make those, or did they just like fuse together as they were in the fucking?
I took it as like they fused together, like
yeah, they were like just.
Like the shit you leave in your freezer and forget about for 5 years, and then you pull out a big block of something, and you don't know what the fuck it is.
Oh my God, you throw it out.
But they actually did show that, because when the lightning storm happened, you know, Frankenhooker was getting made, but then you also saw the lightning bolt go.
I didn't catch that. That explains it. Then if it went over to the fridge. So
I got that.
It recreated the experiment, but inside the fridge. Gotcha.
Hilarious. He goes to New York. He meets a Swedish guy. Hey, have you seen my girlfriend? She's purple. She's not purple. She's wearing purple. And he said it to every single person on the street.
And her hair was purple.
She's purple.
She had a purple nurple.
But I don't think everybody saw that. I think the only, like the dude.
No, we don't see that till later.
Well, the annoying guy that was
somebody
was just like, can we talk about that little pathetic guy? Hilarious, that guy. So pathetic.
Yeah,
that was funny. But I mean, the Swedish guy, and he's like, what? You're in New York. Why are you talking Swedish? I don't understand why you're talking Swedish.
Like, as if nobody in New York ever is from anywhere else.
You can tell I don't think he's been in New York that often. He's Dr. Jersey Boy. So he's he's a Jersey boy. He's been in Jersey.
He's a Dr.
Jeffrey
Jersey.
Is supposed to be kind of a nerd and like kind of awkward and yeah. And like, he seems very sheltered from the world. And when he first goes and meets with the prostitutes, you know, and he's trying to like pick one I forgot that one girl's name, but she's like, come with me. We'll go meet Zara.
Amber,
he'll hook you up. Well, whoever it was. And she takes him through, was it like the bathroom of the CD bar?
Yeah, it was like a crack den.
Yeah. Everybody's like doing crack and fucking in the bathroom stalls, and everybody just looks like a complete degenerate. I mean he looks so shocked. Like, he did not think he was signing up to even witness any of that, and you kind of feel like
he didn't.
Like, I was Jacqueline, laughing, but I kind of felt bad for him.
Halfway through that, he was totally into it, especially when Zorro pulled out the crack and you saw these little vials in this plastic baggy thing, and he's like, hold on a second, I'm gonna go make super crack.
I got the idea that he did a little bit of the crack once he got back with it.
I thought he did too, but he actually didn't.
He looked cracked out.
No, he did. Well, he looked cracked out.
He was killing his brain by that time.
Oh my God. Oh, we didn't talk about that.
What was he doing? What's the
Oh my God.
I question marked that in my notes. Like, what was the point of that?
He was trying to come up with
think better.
Like, I guess a part of your brain, again, I don't know the anatomy and physiology of your brain, but apparently there's a part of your brain that comes up with lies, maybe. It almost seem like lies or something.
I was thinking ideas. It was how them think. Like,
no, it wasn't an idea, because he
clearing
was,
his mind.
He seemed like he was always coming up with a lie. Well, you know, I'm not killing them. I'm just doing this. I'm not stabbing them. I'm not shooting them. I'm just going to do this so I can get
true, the right.
Because that's when he thought about, oh yeah, I can have multiple women. That's why he came up. He's like, I need multiple women.
I just didn't like that scene was never, they never coupled it with any gore. Like, there was no blood dripping or anything. It was kind of weird.
A confusing thing to me. I interpreted it also as him just like sort of clearing his mind and coming up with like solutions to his problems, whether they were like lies or not. But it's like, why does it not seem to hurt him? And where is the blood? And what, like, am I seeing what I'm seeing? There were just no like visual cues for me.
If the actor had some blood come out of his eyes or something every time he did it, or just something subtle, or his ears or something, it would have cued like, all right, he's hurting himself, but it's beneficial to him.
Like Coffin Joe.
Or even if he just made like a grimace face or something, like to like, you know, there was nothing. I mean, he was just like, drill, 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 drill. Oh, now I know what to do.
That part
really played weird for me.
Did I miss this? This is right? Where he did it the first time he ever drilled his brain, he did it twice. Because, oh, wait, hold on a second. That's not going to work. Oh, what about this?
Maybe to find the space, the spot. I only remember seeing him do it twice, but
I thought the first time he ever did it twice, because
find the right spot. Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't find the right spot. No, he didn't find the right idea. And he had to drill back into his brain and go, wait, hold on a second. What about this?
Cause I remember there were at least two times where he went and got the drill to clear his mind.
But didn't he check a diagram like during the first time? And he was like, oh no, it's not number 21. Yeah, it's number 22. It's like a different spot. He was like, ah, okay. Yeah, my diagram has instructed me otherwise.
Yeah. 21, 201.
Yeah. I think it was 69 was the one.
Of course.
Might have been. I don't know. But this fucking movie, oh my God.
This movie was excellent.
I think we've been discussing it like far more seriously than like anybody has ever discussed it before, including the people who made it. But
there were some funny scenes in it. I get that. I mean, and I know they weren't trying to take themselves too seriously, but there were some things where you just like, really?
I mean, it's a product of its time too. So you got to take that into account. I mean,
understood.
But Rocky 80s film. Late 80s.
Yeah, but Basket Case came out before that. So did Brain Dead.
And some of your complaints about this movie, you could probably find in Basket Case and Brain Damage. Like, they all deal with the inner city and like pretty grimy neighborhoods and social. I bet there's social commentary in all three.
Agreed.
I think you're right. Yeah, but I think ultimately and overall, you're not supposed to take these movies that seriously.
No.
Like, I mean, I think that like the scene with the exploding hookers and the, you know, him working in the lab. I think that's like the level on which you're supposed to take this movie, and any more serious commentary is like thrown in as a bonus, and you could sort of take it or leave it. Like you could even make the argument that there is a commentary about like mental health and treatment of mental health when he's like, sure, obviously making these cries for help, and his mom is like, "Do you want a sandwich?"
Like, yeah,
just no response at all to what he's saying.
Well, I totally disagree. I thought his mom was very, very caring. I thought his mom that you know was very concerned about him.
She was blind to what was really going on.
She was, but I think she didn't know how to respond to what he was talking about, and there was no attempt to get him any professional help.
Nor how could you feel that way? You know, because he's in the grieving process. Like to me, if we want to go back to Brain Damage or we want to go back to Basket Case, to me there was a beginning, middle, and end. This movie had that, but there was so much fluff in between. Like this movie to me could have been 45 minutes long, and not to say that his previous movies couldn't have been shorter as well, but this is only an hour and 25 minutes, I think. And it just felt so much longer than it really needed to be.
And we got tell to you the, why.
Go ahead.
One of my complaints, you don't get the Frankenhooker till 55 minutes into the film.
Exactly right.
Yeah, that's lame.
Way there could have been a lot more building, like character development with Elizabeth in this body dealing with. She was played more for laughs than anything else, but I feel like there could have been a little bit of a serious tone, at least to the character development of.
Like, yeah, and she like the her setup was like this. Did you get that they were in love? Did you get like
we didn't get them enough?
I exactly right. I mean, it's just like this guy sitting there looking at a brain with an eyeball in it. Nobody gave a shit.
We didn't really get an idea of their relationship.
Did you even know that, like, within the first 7 minutes of the movie that they were even engaged?
No.
You know, she was wearing this, like, brown, look like a cupcake. And she told her friend, oh, yeah, he stapled my stomach, and I still eat all the time.
They were talking about different weight loss conventions and stuff.
They weren't really. She was talking about him stapling her stomach, and that was it.
No, they were talking about other things. She said, I've tried a lot of things, and he even stapled my stomach. And that's when her friend's like, oh, wow, he's a doctor?
Yeah.
But her mother gets on her about pretzels, right? Because that comes up later when she's Frankenhooker.
Yes. Yeah.
Bar, and they're like, go easy on the pretzels. And she's like, uh-huh. So I thought she did a good job as the Frankenhooker.
I totally agree.
I don't disagree with that at all. Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all.
Especially for like an actress who's supposed to be, you know, like hot. Like she's obviously a very pretty woman. And a lot of actresses, I think, would not want to play a role that forces them to look silly or gross. Like they just want to look hot. And they don't want to like kind of abandon that to like really get into something that makes them look anything but hot. And I thought that she added some real humor and, you know, did the whole like shambling along like a creature thing. And I thought she did a great job.
I just love how she blurted out all the phrases that the other hookers had said earlier. Like, hey, guys, need a date? Looking for company? Going out?
That
you got any money? Like, to me,
she was my favorite character of the movie. Jersey like, boy. But you got her for like 15 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
And it was just, yeah. she was doing all that.
They
and,
ham it up.
And Jacqueline, you're right. The way, you know, the way she went from, you know, just like this girl next door look to having, you know, just freaking staples or sutures in her neck and doing that kind of stuff. She did fantastic. The Frankenhooker yeah. character was awesome.
Right. I mean, of course, the dialogue makes no sense because it's not like your brain has been split. It's just like, okay, so your memories come from your body parts? I don't think so. Like, it makes no sense.
It works,
but like, who cares? I'm sorry. You're right. I'm sorry. I don't know how it works.
You're an English teacher, not a scientist.
That's, I don't know. I clearly need to brush up on my reanimation.
We don't know if you
knowledge.
Hook another person's foot to your body, if maybe it gives you a memory.
Maybe we should try it.
That foot was a soccer player, so I can kick the ball 20 yards.
Going back to when he has like his little dinner with her, his celebratory dinner, and he like pulls like all her parts out of the rejuvenation liquid or whatever. And he's having a serious date with her. Serious. He even pours some wine down her gullet and like it just goes all over the tablecloth. It's ridiculous. That's when that was a very beginning scene, and I was just like, man, they're really playing this Jeffrey character like super serious.
When he read this poem to her, and I was like,
oh my god, when he gives it to her,
Heidelberg could beat that any day,
dude. Jacqueline, I thought the same thing. I was like, wow, this poem is like Heidelberg reach around quality, like poem.
No, not even. I think yours is your.
I don't know. It wasn't bad. I took some notes when I watched it.
He got some points for that poem.
When he sticks it in her hand,
I think your poetry is much better.
I want you to take this with you into the solution. I need to stick it on your hand. Ridiculous.
I do want to mention something that, going back to something you said earlier, Heidelberg, about how she doesn't show up until like 55 minutes into the film. Also, like if you're kind of loosely following the plot of Frankenstein, you know, the book or the original movie, like I want to see her kill some people. Like she should go on a rampage where she's like people dispatching people left and right. Like that's the point of why the monster is scary. And obviously it's like a perversion of our bodies, but I wanted to see her kill somebody. So
didn't she only kill like technically three people? Cause she
pushes somebody into a car and
no, she goes back to the hotel room with that one weirdo guy. And then
electrocutes him, but is that on purpose or is that just a byproduct of her? Like,
I think that's just her, the way she killed people, because she killed that guy. She made out with the other guy.
It was death by snoo-snoo.
Yeah.
Death by what?
Because of the crack and the hooker parts, that the super crack, when you have sex with her, it heats you up and you blow up just as if you were using the crack. I love that.
I think
that was a thread.
Okay. Well, see, I didn't grab that.
You didn't pick that up.
No, I grabbed the electricity.
That was the electricity. Yeah,
that was the super crack inside her.
Oh, okay. Well,
maybe it's both.
It was the same effect. The guy turned into paper mache and blew up. Obviously, he had super crack.
Well, you see those little like purple electricity lines like radiating around. So I thought it was she was still electrified from her reanimation.
Like the pimp that tries to eat her out at the table, and then he goes down on her.
Oh Jesus!
Yeah, he blows up.
And like you see the electrical lines going through his legs while he's wearing his tracksuit,
like a TV antenna.
And by the way, Zorro knew exactly where Jeffrey lived. He had driven off like minutes before, but he knew exactly.
Well, he called a taxi in New York.
He didn't get it right away, but like Jeffrey was already gone.
Have you ever been in New York and driven in a taxi?
No, I can't say that.
Really. Really fucking fast, bro.
Oh, nice.
So that's why you catch somebody. They might actually.
But he caught up to him in New Jersey, because that's where he's from.
He followed him to New Jersey.
Okay, there you go. That must have been expensive.
Zorro's a very capable guy. I mean, you don't name yourself Zorro unless you can take care of yourself.
True, and it's very expensive, and you got a lot of money. You're a pimp, so I guess I don't know.
He's an entrepreneur. I wouldn't call him a pimp. Please, John.
That's what his tax returns say, entrepreneur. Well, guys, any other major points that we need to make before we go and give our ratings on
this cow as much as we can?
Oh my god,
I'm utterly finished.
Oh, this is utterly awesome.
Oh, Jacqueline's doing the reach around plot next week.
No, thanks. I cannot hold a candle. I could not hold a candle to Hydroburg. I wouldn't even want to try.
Can I just say that doing the reach around each week, it's a lot of pressure. I won't
insult Hydroburg by even humoring that. So.
And I'm sure it's a lot of pressure, Hydroburg, but you know what? We count on you. We appreciate you. And just keep it up. Keep up the good work.
Absolutely.
Oh, yes, I agree. Keep up the good work. Don't let the pressure get to you. All right. So, Hydroburg, this was your choice. Do you want to give your review first?
Absolutely. All right. I'm going to go with the pros first. I think the plot is hilarious. It may be a weakness, but it's also a strength, I feel like, in this movie. It's just stupid. I like the mix of serious and schlock. I think it's weird. It's like certain scenes are set a certain way where I'm like, is this meant to play this way? It's a little serious. And then there's like some schlocky shit going on. And it's just, I wish I could see it behind the scenes on like exactly what the intent was on each scene or certain scene. I think the special effects are... I think the special effects, I think they're so bad that they're good. I don't know what the aim was while filming, but I feel like it's a negative, but it's turned positive in my book. Like, it makes this so bad. I don't know if they were going for serious and with their budget or what. I don't know. It's hard to tell, but they made me laugh. Like, I'd have to imagine paper mache prostitutes blowing up. a plus that this film doesn't intend to be, but it's our first trauma film, and that's a plus in my book. As a podcast, I feel like it's good to have a trauma film in our lexicon.
Sure.
Yes.
I did like Frankenhooker. Like, I thought that the woman who plays Elizabeth, let me just go back, Patty Mullen. I thought she did a great job. I just thought she was underutilized in the
Totally film. Agree. Totally agree.
And I guess that could lead into my cons. I mentioned it earlier, but 55 minutes with just Jeffrey alone before you even get a Frankenhooker, I feel like, I don't know. He was like, he played so serious. And like, we get it. You're suffering. You lost your girlfriend. But I felt like if they could have brought her on screen a little earlier and dealt with her like fish out of water tale and like her dealing with maybe some more conversations between her and Jeffrey, it would have helped out the plot a little bit. So I felt like that was underutilized. They played her more for laughs than anything. And it got stale kind of quick, right? She had the same one-liners. Mm-hmm. The acting, it's really bad in this movie. It's either over the top silly or overly serious in times. And I know that's part of the charm for a film like this, but it's also a ding, in my opinion, if I'm just rating the movie, you know, critiquing it as a film. I'm going to give it 6 out of 10 pumped up pimps.
Yeah, 6. Pumped up pimps. I like it.
That's a tongue twister. I hope I can say it when the time comes.
Up pimps.
All right. So Jacqueline, you go next because I'm going to go last.
Oh, okay. I was going to throw it to you. I agree with a lot of what Hydroburg said. I think that it's like, it's pretty hilarious. And again, if you know what you're getting into when you sign up for Hennenlotter film, then it should fulfill your expectations. I think it would have been too much to have the main character playing it like tongue in cheek or like he was winking at us. It's like, it allowed me to feel more like it was a takeoff on Frankenstein. So I dug that. Like I've already said, I really appreciated the actress who played Elizabeth. I liked the way she played it. I just wanted more of her, you know, and I would have appreciated it if she were more of like a monster after she like deliberately killing people and going on like a rampage to punish Jeffrey or something, maybe after she was reanimated. In terms of the, you know, like you said, the dialogue is pretty bad. It's just silly and often it descends into stupid. Mm-hmm. But again, it's like, if you kind of know to expect that, then it might not bother you so much. If you go into it expecting like The Shining or The Exorcist, you're going to be sorely disappointed, and that's maybe on you. So
I feel like the title's going to spoil that for you.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. So if you hear the title of the movie, you should know what you're getting. It pretty much advertises it for you.
It's like Zombie.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Thanks, Paul.
the storytelling, I think, is weak in the fact that Jeffrey spends so much time alone, especially in the first like half or two thirds of the movie, that like he has to give us information by just like giving monologues all the time. Like we don't see the plot unfold through action and interaction between characters. It's kind of just like Jeffrey talking out loud to himself all the time. Like, oh, I'm not going to have enough voltage, and oh, I'm going to have to do this, and then I can choose what I want, and blah, blah, blah. It's like, it doesn't unfold dramatically. It unfolds with just like monologue info dumps. So, you know, it is what it is. I think what it sets out to do, it does pretty well. I like more like it was satire than just like straight up misogyny. And so I think I give the film credit. I give the film credit for that. So is it like, you know, Hamlet? Absolutely not. But could it be a lot worse? Yeah. Like, I think the effects are hilarious. I think it's better than it really has a right to be. So I'm going to come in at like a 6.5 pumped up pimps.
Whoa.
Yeah, man. I said
we're here to pump you up. What do you guys say about that, John?
John, you look like you're going to explode like a plastic hooker. So tell us what you think.
I'm going to. Here's the thing. I've seen trauma films. I've seen bad trauma films. And this was
not so bad.
No, it was god awful, actually. It was it had none of the gore that you ever see in a trauma film. So that bummed me out a little bit. I get it. Fair. It's tongue in cheek. You know, the misogyny was in I like throughout the movie, I was just thinking, like, what are these guys trying to say? What are these guys trying to do? But it kind of wrapped up kind of perfectly. It was like the perfect bow at the end of the movie because Jeffrey became a woman and, you know, he had to deal with that, you know, and that's the perfect bow you put at the end of this movie. Dialogue was awful. You know, the Zorro character did nothing for me. The Elizabeth character, you guys both said it. It's like you didn't get enough of her. You got
I'd
her.
I'd like to hear what the pimps think of Zorro. If they could call in, maybe. Or...
I thought he was terrible. I thought it was just because it was not believable. You know, I get the acting's going to suck. I mean, you're going to watch a movie like this. The acting is going to suck. But when it sucks that bad, you're just like, you know, can't you be an over the top bad guy? He wasn't even that.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Toxic
Avenger? He's not an actor.
Yeah, have you seen Toxic Avenger? The guy
love
that
Toxic played, Avenger.
Cigar Face. You know, he was so like melodramatic, and you're just like Cigar Face. Ah, you know, it was just like he would play it up to the can. He would ham it up so bad. He didn't. The Jeffrey character was on screen way too much. It felt like a mix between, you know, somebody that's struggling with grief and, you know, freaking. Stuart Gordon from Reanimator. So
okay.
I didn't know what I was watching. I didn't know who I was getting from this guy or where, what direction he was going in, you know? And like, for me, it's just, if I'm going to watch a trauma movie and I'm going to watch something, you know, tongue in cheek and supposed to just not take itself seriously, don't take yourself seriously. That's fine. This character could play it straight the whole time, but we got way too much of this guy.
Fair point.
It was like 14-year-old John would have said, yeah, this movie's a 10 out of 10 pumped up pimps, but I'm gonna land at a 3.
Would have been a pumped up something for 14-year-old John.
Certainly. Just because of that one scene, the exploding hookers. I'm landing at a 3.5 out of 10 pumped up pimps. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I watched it it didn't land for me, guys. I'm so sorry.
I love that the woman in our group rated it the highest.
I thought it was great. That's I love Hen and Lauder films.
I know you so would.
I, you know, I was primed to like this already because I already love every Hen and Lauder film I've seen. So I might have had like a positive bias.
I haven't seen Bad Biology. No.
Oh, I haven't seen that one either. But I feel like John has hated the last three movies that we've had. So I don't know.
Ritual. I changed the ritual.
He did.
I'm sorry. I changed that.
He went a lot higher.
I did. I actually went 6.5 on that one.
Yeah, he went another 2.5 on that.
I'm not a fan of musicals. This one just did not do anything for me at all.
Regardless and of the scores, they've all been great conversations.
It's ridiculous because it's sure. like this movie was an hour and 25 minutes and I paused it four times and I just went, what the fuck am I watching?
A masterpiece, bro.
Yeah, if I was 14-year-old John, it was a masterpiece. It would have been a 10.
I would have watched Page Heat if I was 14 over there.
I'm 25 now, so it was that was that was.
A few oh wow! You must have grew up with Soju. You're only 25.
Yeah, exactly right. I don't know.
Oh,
guys.
For heaven's sake!
What's our trivia for this film? It's gotta have some trivia.
I've actually got some good trivia. You guys want to hear it?
I'd love Absolutely. It. Love it.
All right, I'll give you just kind of the best ones here. All right, let's see here. Okay, so Heidelberg mentioned something about this earlier. The interior of the Franken family garage is intentionally four times as large as the exterior as specified in the screenplay. So nice. It's supposed to look a lot bigger.
Not that idea, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so you noticed that. That was a really good observation. I didn't even notice that. Writer-director Frank Henenlotter improvised the basic story at a pitch meeting. After getting the okay to make the picture, he then wrote the script for the movie.
So he just That's sort of great. That is great.
Came up with it on the fly. Okay, yeah. You guys are not going to believe this fact.
Okay.
This film took 12 years to make.
What?
That's all it says, so I don't have any more information about
that.
Oh,
my God. That's a cliffhanger, Jacqueline. Don't give us that trivia. That's a cliffhanger right there. What? 12?
Because this is his last, like, this is this. I think this film came out after Brain Damage and Basket Case.
Okay, so it came out in what, 1990? So we're saying that it
started in 78.
78.
That seems weird. Maybe the idea of it.
Weird. Yeah.
Screenplay.
I don't know, dude. All right, so here's a good fact. The film cost $1.5 million, making it Henenlotter's most expensive at the time.
It shows.
But there were still budgetary issues. The producers told him that they had used up all of the allotted funds for pyrotechnics during the exploding hooker scene, to which he replied, how the fuck am I supposed to film the lab scene? He ended up calling in a favor to do some quote-unquote unlicensed pyrotechnics for the shoot. And the guy finished the setup and then told him, don't worry, it's maybe safe.
That's how movies were filmed back in the day. Shooting from the hip, getting things done.
Back in 1970.
Also, there's a real porn star in the hookers.
I know who it was.
Yeah.
Oh, who was it?
Heather Hunter.
Heather Hunter, you're right.
Which one was she?
She was the African-American one.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Well, that kind of ties into my next trivia fact. It says... This was Henenlotter's first SAG film, meaning he was using actors who were members of the guild, he ran into some troubles. He ran into some trouble because the girls that the guild was sending did not want to do nudity. So he went to Billy's Topless Bar looking for girls instead. And a short while later, he had signed several strippers on, each of them hired for specific degrees of nudity, and SAG ended up making each of them members.
Nice. So. I was going to ask you that, if any of these girls were actual pros or women like picked up from the street.
Yep, some of them were strippers and hookers, and now they're in SAG.
Makes sense.
And porn stars.
Yep, let's see.
I have a piece of trivia if you haven't touched on.
Go for it.
When this film was released in 1990, Bill Murray himself famously proclaimed, if you see one movie this year, it should be Frankenhooker. And it was on the poster art.
That's awesome.
I'm changing my score to a 9 because Bill Murray.
Because Bill Murray likes it.
Yeah, I'm changing my score to a 9.
If Bill says so, it must be good.
We all need to change our scores to a 9 or a 9.5 because Bill Murray said so.
See, I was the closest out of all you guys.
You were, absolutely. No, I'm not changing my score. It's 3.5.
You're a visionary. Would you just sing a 3?
3.5.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's a
Write
good
it
fact.
Down, Heidelberg, because I guess we're doing scores later this year or something.
Heidelberg, I've been writing them all down, and I'm sorry I forgot to get them to you earlier, but I will.
That's fine. Okay, I just want to write them down.
All right.
Here's a fact. One more good fact. They had numerous body parts on set as props and such, and while some were flexible and more functional, others were stiff like mannequin limbs. Somebody stole the flexible ones, though, forcing them to use the even further from realistic ones in the laboratory scene. So that explains some of why the, why the body parts all look so fake.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you see the one leg that had the huge like hip bone? It looked unnatural. It was like so big.
We didn't talk about this. Like he was going through the body parts as he was putting them on, and the he was using it. Well, no. He was using like this purple paste thing.
Yeah.
Putting them on.
That was his solution.
And then he grabbed the leg. He goes, "Oh, bunions!" And he started grabbing a.
Oh my god! Did you see the foot on that thing?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, it was like a man's foot. It was.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I wasn't really paying attention, but he goes, "Oh, bunions."
He pulled out the file.
So, John, actually, at that moment, my husband walked into the room while I was watching it at that exact moment, and he does not enjoy horror films, and he especially hates things that are like low budget or schlocky. He likes things that are real slick and studio polished and everything. But he came in during that exact scene, and he was like, "Ha, ha, that's funny. Oh, that's pretty good."
Oh, nice. They got a laugh out of Hubs.
It was that actually
coming from him. That's a big deal.
That whole scene was hilarious.
That should be on the box.
Yeah. Joey says, "Ha,
this movie got a laugh from Jacqueline's husband." Yeah. 6 out of 10.
10 out of 10.
Pumped up pips.
Well, that's all I've got really that's in the way of interesting trivia. I have more facts, but most of them are pretty boring. So that's all the best stuff. So,
all right. So here's my thought for next week. We are hoping to get a special guest on next week. Andy Gilley from my former podcast. We're going to talk about Phantasm. Now,
yes.
I know Andy's a very, very, very busy man. So there's a possibility we may have to reschedule that. So here's my thought. There's this brand new movie that came out on Shudder starring Barbara Crampton. It's called Jacob's Wife. So if we don't do Phantasm, that will be our next week's show, Jacob's Wife or Phantasm. With special
Sounds guests. Good.
Spoiler,
Sounds
I heard
great.
She shows her boobs in this movie.
Yeah, you ever seen Reanimator? Bride of Reanimator?
Well, I know, but she's 60 years old right now.
And she looks damn good. I can only hope to God that Kudos I look nearly like half as good as she does at age 60. She's amazing. She does not age. She's taking some kind of estrogen serum. I don't know what she's doing.
She's been super active in like producing and like starring and like pushing things like.
She produced this movie. She produced or executive produced this movie. And by the way, she lives in Southern California. That's how we keep our radiant glow.
No, I know. And the blood of virgins. I know.
She's basically a goddess.
Yeah. True. She's a horror goddess.
Yeah, she is. At least in my eyes. That's for sure. All right. Well, guys, then I guess we'll figure out what's going on with Andy. Either do.
Oh, that's right. We do.
If you want to send us an email with comments or questions or something that you want us to read on the air for the next week, you can email us at acutabovehorrorreview@gmail.com. We're also on Twitter at @cutabovehorror.
We're also on Facebook. You can find us at cutabove colon, not my colon, colon horror review. So just go like us on there too.
We're also on Instagram at @acutabove1horror_review. Keep it creepy.